Welcome to the Aussie Villains podcast. Paul, one of the hosts. What a great preseason. Cannot wait for next week against Newcastle. We'll have a look over the preseason. We'll look at possible combinations for next week. And we'll answer your questions. This is the Aussie Villains podcast. Get us on Spotify, Google, Anchor, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. Love your work.
Whistles blow. Kamara still on the deck. It was Romagnoli's challenge on him. It was good anticipation from Boubacar Kamara to get onto the ball, but it was him that was brought down. And the referee blows the whistle, points to the spot, and gives Aston Villa the penalty. So Ollie Watkins for Aston Villa. Inside the 14th minute. Whistle blows. Watkins with a big deep breath. And the goalkeeper's legs have saved it. Not back in, and he's there again, Provedel. And it stays 0-0. Well, he flung himself to his right-hand side in Ivan Provedel, but it was legs that kept the ball out. And it stays 0-0. Defence into attack, and that's a good ball out to Ollie Watkins from Youri Tielemans. Diaby and Bailey arriving. Watkins might not need any of them. Shoots and goes for goal, and Ollie Watkins finishes. Wonderful ball that got it going from Youri Tielemans, who picked the ball up almost on the edge of his own penalty box. Saw Watkins on the move. Watkins able to turn inside the defenders and fire it past Robbedell to give Aston Villa a more than deserved lead. Aston Villa 1, Lazio 0. The Valencia midfielders saw it quite like that. And now they're giving it away to Ollie Watkins. He's got the RB arriving. Watkins goes for goal and finds it. Great finish. There's a loose ball that set him free. But Watkins has taken his chance inside the 22nd minute. Drilled it past Mamardashvili to give Aston Villa the lead at the Mestalla Stadium. Valencia playing. Couple of draws along the way. They beat Fulham and beat Lazio. And at the moment, they're beating Valencia by one goal. And is over the top now for Diaby. Nice work in midfield there, but just stumbled right for Matty Cash. It's a little nudge, gets Aston Villa a free kick. Villa is like, defensively, they are hard to score against.
Welcome to the Aussie Villains podcast. It's Paul and Spud this afternoon. How are we, Spud?
Very good, buddy. Very good. How are you?
Oh, mate, look, honestly, Chipper, I can't imagine getting more excited before a season starts.
Yeah, I know. It's excellent. Can't wait. Can't wait for next week to kick off.
No, absolutely. And we had the championship kick on or start over yesterday morning, actually. And I love the championship. I still think it's fantastic football. So football's, you know, we've got the Women's World Cup, the championship is back, Premier League on next week. It's all happening, mate.
The European qualifiers, the Champions League qualifiers on at the moment and stuff, yeah. Oh, I love the championship as well, man. It's one of my favourite spectator leagues, to be honest. I always keep an eye on it. It's very good.
The Scottish Premier League kicked off, didn't it? Or am I wrong?
Yeah, they did. Yeah, Celtic won 4-2. And Rangers lost on the opening day to Kilmarnock. Michael Beals
I'm shattered. I'm shattered about those two results, mate. But I shouldn't say too much. I don't want to lose listeners saying that I'm a Catholic. I'll leave that one go. Let's just forget the signings for a moment. Let's just focus, if that's okay, on the remarkable pre-season we've had. Not just results-wise, but the style of play. What I know you've been watching some of them on delay, but you've been watching them. What's been your kind of thoughts and feelings as the pre-season's progressed?
I watched 4 of the 6 games live and 2 on delay, the American ones, when I was at work. But again, I didn't know the score watching them. So my overall feeling, yeah, I was very impressed. Like, I know there's some people complaining about how many goals we concede in pre-season, but if you watch any of the pre-season little mini tournaments that are going around the world, there's high-scoring games in all of them. It's you can't you can't take anything from that, because it's you know, there's teams switching players every four, like doing changing player, four players at a time. Sometimes they're changing full 11, so I wouldn't be too concerned about the goals conceded, to be honest. I keep an eye on the fitness levels and the patterns of play, and I thought there was massive signs there. Yeah, very positive. I think a lot of the players have come out with their heads held high. A lot of them have put down a marker for the season, and it looks like a lot of them are well up. Know there's competition for places, and there's they look up for the fight. So that's a massive positive. I think Emery will see it as a huge success.
Well, let's look at the results first, and then we'll keep talking about it, because I don't think we've probably said enough there. I think there's tons more. 3-3 against Newcastle. Nice. Looked like both teams obviously weren't going full pelt, but they both look like they're going to be very good this year. Nice win against Fulham. We then 3-3 against Brentford was one of those games. A lot of changes, very different formats. We play Lazio on Friday, and that was a really good win, that one. And then beating Valencia 2-1. It's been just a dream. The club could not have scripted the preseason to be better than this.
And a good one all against the opener to every preseason, the Wildside game as well. So we got six good runouts, really. No preseason game at Villa Park is interesting. I can't remember the last time that happened. But interesting to go ahead now. I think the Newcastle game, the first 25 minutes, we were fantastic. We blew them away for the first 25 minutes. We kind of looked like what we done to them in the first game. But again, we didn't have a full team. Newcastle didn't have a full team. It's early in the season. That wouldn't take too much. It was very, very hot that day too. I think the Fulham game was probably our most complete performance. I thought we were very good in that. Lazio was probably our best patterns of play. And Valencia last night probably gave us the biggest spells under pressure of the six games. I think there was probably 15, 20 minutes here and there where Valencia kind of upped the pace, and it was good because we needed that as well. And we showed that we can stand up to that as well.
Bloody oath, mate. I mean, you should expect that from a team like Valencia, who are seasoned, have made Europe so many times. And, you know, we should expect that kind of... I think it was the perfect last hit out. We looked tired. We looked really leggy, and so did Valencia at times as well. So now it's that recovery before the Newcastle game.
Well, it was 26 degrees and very humid, and like a lot of those players started Thursday night as well. So, I mean, that's an even quicker turnaround than they're going to have in the conference and league. Like, it'll be Thursday, Sunday. That was Thursday, Saturday for them. So it was interesting.
That looked like it was almost deliberate, wasn't it? Like, let's get prepared for what's going to be ahead. And a big focus of our pre-season from all different pundits and supporters and ourselves and everything has been about who we're going to get rid of and who we're going to sign, but, you know, who we're going to get rid of. But we've seen through this pre-season, we're going to need that depth. Yeah, you're going to get injuries. Sorry.
No, I know. I was looking at this last night, man, and I was looking at I think we had 11 players on the pitch, 11 players on the bench starting last night, and you're still missing Carlos, Dendoncker, Moreno, Ramsey, and somebody else as well. That wasn't even on that. The squad is inflated at the moment. There's definitely going to be guys go out the door this week. 100%. I can't see how there won't be, you know. There's a big squad there now. There might be one or two more come in, I don't know, but there's definitely going to be a few out the door. There's no way he's going to go into the season with a squad of 27. I'm very surprised. So once the league starts, you can only name 9 on the bench anyway. He had 22 in the bench last, or 22 in the squad last night, and that was with 3 or 4 that would probably be in the squad, not there. So, yeah, it's interesting. I think a few is going to go. I found Carlos not being involved at all very interesting.
And that's been a big thing. And I think someone asked us that question, so we might hold that one, because I think one of our listeners asked that question.
And then the other thing I had then as well, the weirdest thing for me now, by this stage of preseason, usually they're starting to get 90 minutes into the player's legs. He didn't. And like, you look at Man United Saturday. Man United played Lawn Saturday 3-1. 9 of their players got 90 minutes. And that's kind of standard for pre-season. So it's interesting what Emery's going about it, because I would say over the 6 games, off the top of my head, no, I haven't looked into this, but from the top of my head, spread out over the 6 games, the only players I can think of who've played 90 minutes was Tillemans against Fulham. Louise last night, Martinez last night, Konsa last night, and Mings last night. And I think they're the only players that have played 90 minutes over the six games at any point. So I find that very interesting.
I do too, but looking at the style Emery plays and looking at what we're going to have to achieve, I mean, that comes down to our fitness coaches and everything as well. And they might have, well, they might not have, they've got their concepts of it. And, you know, I'm going to just trust that the club has that right. Yeah, I do know what you're saying. It's strange, but maybe the club's like, this is going to be a long season. We're going to play in Europe. We want a long run in the FA Cup. We've got League Cup. We want to win everything or get, you know, as deep as we can. We're going to really need to build into this season because I look at teams that have had great starts over the last few years that weren't expected to, and they dramatically drop off. And you just wonder if it's they build up too early.
Yeah. And what it kind of says to me as well is that he has a lot of trust in the squad. So I think that he plans to use the 5 sub rule in the league to the absolute maximum this year. Because, so that's what it says to me, because a lot of players are playing 60 or 70 minutes. And as I said, that is unusual for any coach to do that in what he's been doing the last couple of games there, where there's still only one or two players playing 90 minutes. And so it is interesting. I'm interested to see why he's done that. And as you say, it could be a long-term benefit. Maybe it's to cover 60 games in the end, you know. No talk of... sorry, you went to divide the careless thing. But yeah,
We will come to it. We will come to it.
but I do. That's one thing I found very interesting is how little lads have played 90 minutes. So I'm interested to see how that develops.
Yep. Absolutely. Okay. We're going to hold one from Smithy because it's one that's going to take a bit of... we might blend it into our kind of preview of the Newcastle game.
Yeah.
So we'll leave that one. Ian Orman, serious question. Who do you see outperforming this season, specifically because of Emery Ball? He might mean overperforming or performing beyond our expectations. I'm going to take it as that. Do you agree? Serious question. Who do you see outperforming this season?
So is he trying to say who do we think that the system will suit really well?
Yeah, I mean, I take it as that. Or who do you think is going to, perform beyond our expectations?
Who's going to be the kind of surprise package of the season type thing?
Yep.
I think for me at the moment, the person who looks to have gone to another level for me this season and really looks up for the fight already, I would say Ezri Konsa. He's had an unbelievable preseason. If he can take that form into the league, I think Ezri Konsa for me. I think the competition seems to have suited him. He certainly wasn't that good in preseason over in Australia last year. In fact, he was the opposite. He looked lost at times, didn't he? In the games we were at,
he looks fitter. He looks
stronger, fitter, more comfortable on the ball. Yeah. Yep. Looks like he can play centre back. He'll play right back. You know. I'm going to say Ezri Konsa. I think he's going. We're going to see a big, big season from him.
I'm going to do a test, if that's okay. I need your permission. Can I do a test?
Go for it. I don't have a siren for you, though.
Okay. one's a very obvious one, but Tillemans has just already... He looks like a guy rejuvenated. He looks like a guy so super confident in this system suiting him. He just looks like... he looks like the best signing. And I said it last week in the pod. He looks like the best signing we've got so far. He just adds an extra element. We're going to have one or two defenders have to, you know, go to him. And he's just changing the dynamic in our team. And I think Tillemans is just perfectly suited to Emery Ball. And I'm just loving what I'm seeing from him. He just looks like a, you know, $70 million signing in my mind. The other one I wanted to bring up, and we thought he was gone, but his cameos are going to be so important come Europe. This game suits him. It has to be Philip Coutinho.
Yeah, he was excellent last night.
Oh,
he came in at the right time last night, just when energy levels were starting to drop, and he came in and he grabbed control of the game, which was fantastic. And as you say, I think Europe is probably, if we do keep him, I still a part of me thinks if a big enough bid came in, they'd take it, but I don't know. Emery seems to like him, but I think you have a player like him in games in the conference and stuff, man, where the pace is going to be that little bit slower. Like he could be a serious weapon. Like, I mean, yeah, he's definitely a lot of signs. I would have thought he'd be gone this year.
I do too. But I mean, if Emery and him have had a talk and he's like, okay, this is what I see for you. I see you coming in for these periods of time, and when you do, you know, you're going to star. I think something like that has been said between the two of them. And Coutinho probably realises his body's not up to 90 minutes anymore, but he could still have some fantastic times at a club.
Well, yeah, Emery's in a great position where he can say it to the likes of Coutinho and all that, saying, look, we've get through the playoffs and we've like six group games in the Europa League. Like, we've possibly an extra 7 or 8 games this season. Like, with the squad depth there now, anyway, as we always say, I think Emery plans to go deep into all the competitions now, anyway. So, yeah, Coutinho looks ready to battle it out. I'd be interested to see how the pace of the Premier League he holds up, though. But, yeah, definitely can be a weapon in the conference. But there's a lot of them. With Tillemans there, what you were saying about the about he looks the most set, I think you're 100% right there. But he was bought specifically for Emery's system. They got that deal done very quickly. So I think, obviously, he's someone Emery wanted as well. But he's coming from an easier place than, say, Diaby or Torres as well. You know, he's been in the league a long time. He didn't have to move house when he moved. He's not trying to settle into an area. So he's already got an advantage over Diaby and Torres for that.
Oh, no doubt. But, you know,
he's going to be a serious weapon for us, Tillemans. Like, he looks sensational. I mean, Tillemans, McGinn, Louise and Kamara, it's an unbelievable midfield. Like, it's unreal. Like,
I'm still in dreamland. You can probably hear it from my voice. I just can't believe this squad, how it's come together within a year. You know, a year and a bit ago, we were watching some pretty dross football between Villa and Leeds at Suncorp, and thinking, okay, we'll be okay though. And then it feels like 5 years ago.
It does, yeah. It's like a completely different team at the moment. And like, all the managers have contributed their little bit to the squad, but it took a quality like coach like Emery to tie it all together. And that's the difference. Like, yeah. the play, like, he's unreal. I mean, you're looking at the game last night, like the different patterns of play and the movement we're playing, and three or four different systems he fitted in. No, he's not going to do that in a league game, but he managed to play three or four different systems last night. Like, and the players are seamlessly moving into these systems. It's a joy to watch, really.
Look, absolutely. So, really good question. And people, you know, maybe follow that one under our Twitter feed and put up there from, it was Ian Orman 5. He always asks great questions. So maybe, you know, put it under there. His serious question, who do you see outperforming this season, specifically because of Emery Ball? So put yours up there, guys. Another one for me, and silly question, you have access to a time machine. You can go back in time to the year before we were relegated. What do you do? I'll go first on this one, mate. I'll do nothing because we are where we are at now. You know, I can say get Emery then, but this is the right place, right time. I'll do nothing. Because the bad times make these better times just even more golden. So, Ian, I'm going to do nothing. Over to you, Spud.
Can we change anything up to the season before we relegate, is it?
Yes.
Is that what he's saying?
Yeah.
If I was to change one thing in the season, up to the season before we got relegated, it would be in 2009 under Martin O'Neill, when we had a very good team. And in the January, we were 8 points ahead of Arsenal. We were third, and there was 3 Champions League spots at the time.
That's right.
We were crying out for a goal scorer, and the club signed Heskey. If I could change anything, that's not a knock on Heskey. He just wasn't the prolific striker we were missing at the time. He did bring stuff to the team after, but we needed a Jermaine Defoe or someone at that time. We should have pushed the boat out for a striker like that, and we would have got Champions League football. And I think the next few years after that would have been very different then, because once we kind of Champions League started getting beyond us, that's when Randy Lerner started pulling his money back when he realised how much it was going to cost. So if I was to change one thing, if I could change one thing, it would be that we would have not bought Heskey and bought a more prolific striker when we were in such a commanding position.
Yeah, it's a fantastic statement. I love it. I love your rationale behind it. Mine is everything happens for a reason. You're in a place and a time where opportunities present. So for me, maybe if I had access to a time machine, I'd probably go see more games. Because obviously, I get just, here's work, I'll head off. So maybe that's what I would do. Some great questions, though. Really keep them up, guys, at Aussie Villains on Twitter. We'll come to some Facebook ones in a moment as well. Let's just have a look here. In light of, okay, this is from Michael. So Michael, 1874. Great one. I like it, Michael. In light of the financial situation at Villa and the continuous improvement of players we sign, is it time for fans to start the conversation about naming rights at Villa Park if this can bring extra revenue to our club? Now, we've actually spoken about this, Michael. It's a great question. We've spoken about this a number of times. I have absolutely no issue, Spud, with us changing Villa Park commercially, because every single supporter is still going to call it Villa Park. If it means our stadium goes to 60,000, I don't want to belittle those people who live in Birmingham who go to Villa Park for their whole life and their grandparents and great-grandparents. It will always be Villa Park, but I'm talking long-term. I think it will happen anyway, so I'm okay with the name changing.
Yeah, as I said before, it's not ideal, but I just accept that it's probably inevitable. It's going to happen, and it's just how it is. It's just the way football has gone. Like, if we want to be a big club, that's probably what's going to happen. I'll never get behind us leaving Villa Park, but if we have to change the name, gosh, look, but what does it matter? If it helps the club, then so be it. I'd like them, if they do change it, though, I'd like them to have the sponsor's name but keep Villa Park in it somehow.
Yeah, and that's what I don't know if you were on the pod because we've switched up, but that's what I said in the pod a few weeks ago, something like, Sony Stadium or Villa Park, or, you know, Sony Villa Park or something, you know, like, I haven't got the right, you know, words.
Oh, I know what you're saying, yeah, and I'm not that pod member. I was talking about the article that I read of the reason why they don't tend to do that is because the companies pay so much for their naming rights that they're afraid that if the name is too long, then when it gets to Sky Sports and doing commentary and all that, they'll still refer to it as Villa Park all the time and the sponsorship money will be lost. So that's why I was reading the article, that's why a lot of companies won't get on board with it. So it's very rare that you'll have a sponsor name and the stadium name together. And I do kind of get that point.
I think it's got to be pretty iconic. Like, yeah, there's so many names or sponsored names of the stadiums. I don't know what they are anymore. Yeah. Like, I used to know, like, if a stadium was called Gillette Stadium, I knew that was, the New England Patriots or whatever. But I don't know. You could name a whole heap of stadiums. I wouldn't know what they are anymore by the sponsor.
Yeah, and it's just the way football's gone. And unfortunately, look, I can understand why people wouldn't want that to happen. Look, I just think it is going to happen. It mightn't happen this season, but over the next couple of years, I think, especially if we were to get into Champions League football, where sponsors will pay big, big money, you know. And at the end of the day, like, Chris Heck has been brought in to do all this kind of stuff. They're not paying him the wage they're paying him, like, to keep everything the same. He's been brought in for a reason. So I'm at peace with it. It's not ideal, but I just accept that's how football goes. So, like, I can't want all this success and all these players coming and then expect nothing to change, because what's gone on in the past obviously hasn't worked. So now they're going to have to look at what does work and look at other models and look what Man City do with the Etihad Stadium. Look how much money that brings in for their FFP on a regular basis every 3 years. So not ideal, but it is going to happen. So I don't think people should be getting too upset about it. I think there's worse things that could happen in football.
No, absolutely. Absolutely right, mate. So we'll just go to the Facebook page now. So just having a look here. So this is from Troy Asquith. I hope you're recovering from everything, mate. Selection choices for Unai get harder with every game. Kamara, Dougie and Sillemans are all excellent players, but can't see a starting side having all three in it. Before pre-season, Dougie and Kamara were who I thought to be shoo-ins to start, but Sillemans has been sensational the last two games. Does he come into starting side? And if so, who for? So does he mean Tillemans? Because Tillemans is in.
Yeah, he's saying which two of the three will start. And yeah, he said because he doesn't think the three can start together. I disagree. I think the three are going to start together. Not every week, but there's going to certainly be games where the three of them are putting together. There's so many ways they can manipulate that team now that you can get the three of them in. Because we now have the players to play the different systems. I don't think it's going to be every week you're going to have the three of them in, but definitely going to be games where the three of them are in, games where we need to take control of the middle. Sure, the three of them could easily play together in a 4-3-3 or a 4-3-2-1. I think we're definitely going to see him. I think we'll see them play together a lot at home. Probably not, maybe not as much away, because you're giving up more possession away from home. But when we're taking possession and dominating games, and against the likes of Man City away and stuff, or sorry, Man City at home, where you know you're not going to have the same possession, but you've got to cut out the ball in the middle. I could easily see us going to a 5-3-2 with the three of them in the middle, or a 4-3-3. You know, so I would disagree that they can't play it together. I think we will definitely see them together quite a bit. And in the bigger games in Europe, I'd imagine we definitely will, because the slower paced games in Europe, the game is massively important in the middle. And I think the knockout stages of the Europe, if we get there, I think the three of them will definitely start together.
Yep, no, okay, absolutely. So this is one from Mark Smith on Facebook. So Smitty, we've got one in for you. Not a question as such, but will you be doing a 10 or 15 minute item in the upcoming podcast for the Fantasy League that Cuban Knight has set up? So we do have a Fantasy League. Details we'll put back up on the page and on Twitter again. I think we will talk to Tess about it. Unfortunately, he is doing up a beautiful caravan today. He loves traveling with his family. So we'll put that, Mark, we'll put that to Tess. And yes, we will record at least, you know, a 5 or 10 minute section on how to go about it and everything there as well. Another question from him. Where's John Duran? I'll let you start with that one, mate.
There hasn't been much about him, has there? The only thing I've heard about him so far is that that Emery said that he is keeping him in the squad. So the only thing I can really put him down to is that he's injured. Like that injury that he got towards the end of last season, he just wasn't recovered from it yet, because he hasn't played any ball since. But he's been in the media days and stuff. So that's the only thing I can put it down to, is that he's injured. That he's just...
Got to be, because, you know, we honestly thought he was going to feature quite, or I thought he was going to feature quite a lot to see if he was up to playing this year. Because when is a loan cut off? Or can they still loan players out right now?
I think when the transfer window ends, I think that the loan transfer to the Championship goes on for another week or two after that.
Yeah,
don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure you can't loan between Premier League clubs, but I think the Championship have another week or two of loans after. So maybe it's a case of maybe they're in for a target, and if they get him, maybe John Duran goes on loan. If they don't, he stays in the squad. So just as I said, there hasn't been much about him at all, and the way Emery's talking, he's keeping him in. So yeah, it's all I can put it down to is injury, really.
No, I agree. Richard Murphy asks, have either Philogene Badace or Kellyman done enough to be deemed first-team squad players, or is loaning them out still the most likely option? Philogene Badace has played some superb stuff and looks to offer more than Bailey at this point in time. I actually agree. I would be selling right now. I would, if there's money for Bailey, with what I've seen this preseason, just take the money and run. Because I'm sorry, mate, the last two performances, the amount of times he can, I don't see him being able to play out in that position. I'm done with him, mate. I'm over it. Sorry, I don't want to be negative, but Bailey's just going to give the ball up too much in this system.
Yeah, I think Philogene's probably done enough to warrant to be in the squad. Really, I think he's. I can see him being kept around, and you're right. Maybe if a big move does come in from Bailey, then Emery will take it. I think Emery was looking for a winger, whether or which anyway. So maybe Philogene emerging will change his mind and buying another winger. Kellyman, he's had a great preseason, but he's not going to be playing first team.
He's not ready yet.
He's either due a year in the academy or maybe a loan to the Championship, but. He's definitely got himself in Emery's thoughts, though, because he's kind of the games he did get on, he really performed. But I don't think he's ready to play regularly in the Premier League.
So maybe that question we had on Twitter earlier about the overperforming players. I mean, Badace has been the surprise packet of the preseason. I knew he could play, but he seems to be thriving under this style of play as well. So he could be the surprise packet of the year. You know, if we can't find that big name winger, then we've got a homegrown player as well who makes a difference for our financial fair play.
But it just goes to show when the loan market can work really well. Like, you know, players are, you know, they've got the talent, they've got the potential, but they're just not getting their chances at the club and they go away for a year. I mean, probably the best example of that at Villa was probably Jacob Ramsey.
Oh, yeah.
He was, he was nowhere really near the first team, and then suddenly he went to Doncaster for 6 months, I think it was, and started to play regularly, and he just came back and he was like a different player, even though he wasn't that major outstanding. I think he scored a couple of goals for Doncaster, but then he arrives back and he's just different player altogether after playing a bit of men's football. So seems to be the case with Philogene. I know Rhino was keeping an eye on him quite a bit because he was playing at Cardiff last year, and Cardiff were massively struggling. And Rhino was saying that Lamucci, the coach at the time, was rating him very highly. I might be wrong in this, but did he get the Cardiff's Player of the Year? I think he might have.
Oh, I thought he did. That's
yeah,
right.
I think he might have. Maybe their young player of the year. Maybe I think he got the player of the year though. So he's a strong, solid young player. Like, he looks like he'll be able to handle himself in the Premier League too. So I would say, depending on himself, because I've read a lot of articles in The Athletic and stuff recently saying that it's not about money for him. Like, he feels ready to play regular men's football now. So it's whether Emery can convince him to be a part of the squad, because I don't think he's going to be starting week in, week out for sure. But I think Emery will keep him around. But Kellyman, no, I don't see it. I think he'll either be playing with the under-23s or he'll go down. He's still only 17, and he's not like a big, strong 17-year-old either. He's a slight lad.
I was going to say, that's where I'd keep. I don't think I'd loan him out either. I think I'd keep him in the 23s.
Yeah, 17. But talent definitely there, though.
Oh, definitely. And our 23s perform really well, and they get good cup runs and stuff like that. So I think, you know, we always say if you're good enough, you're old enough. But what you just said is what I worried about, is the rigors of that. You know, that body probably needs another year of conditioning, I think.
Yeah.
But we'll just follow on. Smithy, another question here, mate. After watching the first half against Valencia, please tell me, Leon Bailey, what do we do about him? Look, I don't want to be cruel, but when we're trying to get to where we think we want to get to in Europe, and we should have the aim for Champions League. We should be aiming for Champions League this year. Then he can't play because he's just a mistake machine now. Sorry, glimpses can't do it when we've got the talent coming through. He's done.
Yeah, I don't know. I want him to do well, but he's just he does nothing to give me the confidence. I mean, he has these moments where I just think, wow, there's definitely a player there, but I just think he's too inconsistent and he's a bit soft too, to be honest. And I don't think, like, when you look at the difference between him and Diaby there, or even him and Philogene, as you say, like, Philogene looks like he can take a kicking, you know? And I think you come up against your Burnleys and all that, they're just going to kick Bailey out of it, and he doesn't look up to the fight. So I think you can get him out of the game very early, and I don't know.
For 12 months, we've all wanted him to work. All of us in this pod and so many supporters wanted him to work. But there's one thing I've never been able to tolerate when I've coached, And I cannot handle a kid or an adult who will not do the hard yards, who will not track back. That is something, I don't care if you don't shoot well, something goes wrong, you don't have a great game, but if you don't chase, you're in big trouble in my teams. And that guy does not track back. I'm sorry, mate. He goes down, he goes, oh yeah, I'm going to stay down a little bit longer, and doesn't get up and track back. I got angry when I was tackled. I got tackled. Yeah, I might be hurt, but I got up and I chased. So I won't tolerate that, mate. And he's playing Premier League football, and the amount of times he does not track back, it kills us.
And the difference when Buendia came on from in the second half, there at half time there last night, sure, the amount of ball that Buendia run back for us. Buendia has his faults as well, but his effort isn't. No one can question Buendia's effort and heart, you know. He's like, there's one stage there, he made a 25-yard run back and got a tackle in, and you're just like, yeah, like, that's, I think that's going to impress Emery more than anything, like, you know. So
100%, mate. So Bailey, look, hey, someone comes in 10, 12 million for him, I say take it.
Just to touch off, I think you're right. I think for Richard's question there, I think Philogene will be kept, and I think Bailey's probably done Philogene more favours than anyone there, you know? Because he's probably looked at the two of them in pre-season now and thought, yeah. As much as I'd like it to work, because Bailey's definitely a tidy footballer. He'll go somewhere that's not as physical and he'll do well, but...
Body footballer, but the exact player we would have held on to for years and years. Mm-hmm. And at the end of his career, we would have said, he did pretty well. Look, this amount of goals and did this and that. But that's the kind of player we can't afford to keep anymore if we want to be where we're going to be.
Yeah, yeah.
You tell me how many teams, top level teams, would he get into Arsenal? First 11?
No.
City, first 11?
No.
Would he get into Man U's first 11? I mean, that's where I look. When I'm looking at the squads now, I go, if we want to be in that top four, would these players make it? And they wouldn't. Would Martinez? Absolutely. Would Watkins? Well, he'd be most of the time in there. You know what I'm trying to say? Like, yeah. If we're going to be in that top four, we can't have players who wouldn't make other teams.
No, I agree. Yeah, he's I think he's doing himself no favors anyway.
Mate, look, every supporter in the world of any club of any sport, you know, you put in a massive shift, and if you're not good enough in the end, people will forgive that, and they'll say, well, you weren't good enough and we wish you the best. But if you don't put in that effort every single time you wear our shirt, you know, I'm no fan of his anymore. I'm done. I'm literally done. When I watched him not run back at his age and not track back in the final two friendlies that we can play, man, you're done. You're done for me. So sorry about that, but I was really kind of cranky when I watched that. And I should have done a YouTube clip on it, because it was three or four times, mate, he didn't chase.
Yeah, no, and that stuff gets noticed too, like.
Well, it frustrated me. Richard Murphy asked another one. Probably unfair to exclude the two Spanish friendlies, but in the US we conceded 6 goals in 2 games against Premier League opposition. Should we be concerned about this, or it can be put down to those games being only friendlies? Some of those goals exposed our high line as well. Is there a fear that some teams will expose this Emery tactic this season?
I think I touched off a while ago in pre-season about the amount of goals wouldn't concern me, because I think we've tightened up at the back the last 2 games. I think there's too much going on, too much change, there's too many different combinations and stuff in the pre-seasons over in America to be too concerned about that. It didn't continue against Lazio. It didn't continue against Valencia. No, like the goals that conceded in America don't worry me. With regards teams testing our high line, of course they are. Like, you're coming up, they're definitely going to. You're coming up against other high quality managers in the league. You've seen how Erik ten Hag approached it last year. We kept catching them offside, so he ended up having 2 runners, and then the late runner was getting in behind us. So yeah, they're going to try and come up against tactics to beat the high line, but more often than not, the high line is catching offside and we're winning the ball higher up the pitch. So I think we're going to concede a couple of goals from it, but it's not going to change. Like, Emery's not going to change his high line. So no. I wouldn't be concerned about it. I don't think it's going to be a case if we go out and play Newcastle, and if we concede 2 goals from over the top of the high line, that the following week we're not going to play it. So that's not how Emery works. His ball is high line, because we've talked about the risk and reward football many times. He sees the benefit of winning the ball high up the pitch, because we explode into life once we do win it. And we're so methodical and slow in our build-up and stepping on the ball and trying to get the press in. And you can see Lazio and Valencia are already putting down a marker for other Premier League teams on how to do it. They didn't engage in the press very often, only in spurts right after the water break. Valencia went for it for a little while, but generally they weren't engaging in the press. And you're going to see much more of that now from teams in the Premier League that are starting to get used to Emery's system more. But the high line will always be there, because he wants to make that pitch, because we have so many tidy footballers. He wants to make that pitch 3/4 of a size of a pitch, because we have the tidy footballers that can. And then the risk is always going to be there over the top, and we're going to concede goals from it, but still going to be played week in, week out.
You summed it up for me. I can't really add too much more than that. Then we have to accept the risk and reward. If you want to see the football that we've already seen in this short period of time, it's a must. Will we be caught out? Occasionally we're going to be caught out by good play, and so be it. But the rewards are having those quality players, as you said, in more dangerous positions.
Yeah.
You know, the ability to go over the top means you also have to commit players to that. And if they're caught out on that, then our good players are free. So it's one of those, yeah, I think you said it, risk and reward, and let's take it.
That's why Martinez is playing 10 yards off his line, 15 yards off his line all the time, like, because he's waiting for that ball over the top.
Yep, 100%. Sweeper keeper.
Yeah.
But he's a bit more than a sweeper keeper in my mind, because a lot of them are just, they'll clear it, like they'll panic. And so, look, mate, let's get into it. We take on Newcastle. Sunday morning, and it's Sunday morning for you as well, 12:30 for you, 2:30 for a lot of Australia. I know in other parts like South Australia, it's, what is it, 2 o'clock there? So whatever time it is, it's Sunday morning next week. How excited are you, mate?
Oh, I can't wait after watching preseason. No, and we had that question on the pod, remember, just before the Premier League fixtures came out, and we were asked a question from one of the listeners saying, who do we most want in the opening day? And my answer was, I wanted to play Newcastle at St. James's Park for the opening day, because I said there's been so much like about back and forth like between Newcastle and Villa fans, because they beat us 4-0 and we beat them 3-0. So it'd be nice to go up to St. James's Park with Emery now and see what we're capable of. And it's a really good game for both teams to start with, because bar the top four, I think the next two or three teams are Villa and Newcastle in that now, you know. So it's a really tough game for both teams.
It is. And I love the fact this first game is actually at Newcastle, because in some ways it gives us the free hit. You're playing away against a team that now has a lot of money, is in the Champions League, is expected to be a perennial Champions League team. I think the minimum that we need to take out of this game is a draw. And if it was, you know, if it was there for the taking and Emery decided, look, we're playing for the draw, I understand the rationale behind that, because you are up against a team that you're going to compete for a top four spot this season. So if it got to a certain point and things weren't going the way we wanted, and Emery's like, let's tighten the ship up and we're going for a point away, that's almost competing against Newcastle for that top four spot as well. So there's so many nuances to this one.
Oh, I think if you walked up in the morning, they'd probably never admit it, but I bet if you walked up and offered Eddie Howe and Unai Emery both a draw, they'd happily take it. If you told them both there's a point in it for both teams, they'd happily take it, because they're getting ready to navigate the European fixtures the following Wednesday. Villa are going to have following week or two, Villa are going to have playoff game in the conference. Eddie Howe's trying to prepare his team for his first ever time as a manager in Europe for the Champions League. So his game's going to come ticking fast. I think they'd happily take a point, but I don't think Emery will want to lose this game. I think he'd be very disappointed, because it's a game that, you know, it's a good opportunity to get on the board straight away, lay a marker down. But I think he'd be very satisfied with a draw and a good performance. I think Emery would be happy.
Let's just, you know, for the listeners, we do think Villa can win this game. We're going to be in it. There's going to be a point in this game where when I say in a winning position, we're playing good enough football to win the game. So I want to differentiate between us saying what we think would be a kind of good result and what can happen. We can win this game.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, like, all I'm saying is that Emery would be happy with a point. I don't think the club would be too disappointed if we get a point. But
I'm on the same path as you.
100%. And are we capable of winning this game? Absolutely, we're capable of winning this game. We blew them away 3-0 at the end of last season. And I think we've had a better window than them, if I'm honest. 100%. I think if the game was at home, I think I'd be saying we're going to be all out for 3 points. It's just the fact that it's an opening day, the first time. We have a couple of new guys settling into the team. But on the flip side, Newcastle are going to believe they can win it too. You know, that's the reality. It's a very good game. Tactically, it's going to be very good. We're definitely capable of winning it.
And that's what makes it good for us, because the expectation will be on Newcastle to get the 3 points, or, you know, anything less than 3 points would be seen as a disappointment for them now. The expectation changes so much.
Yeah. I mean, I said this, not to go too far off track, but I remember I said there a while back there that I think, Newcastle under a bit of pressure this year, because I think Eddie Howe could turn out to be a victim of his own success. Like, he got into the Champions League really quickly, far quicker than the club expected to. So if he was to turn around and have a bit of a wobble of a season, because this is his first time managing in Europe too. So, like, anything now, he could end up being a victim of his own success. If they aren't battling for the Champions League, he may not be in charge next year. Like, if he finished sixth or seventh this year, and that would be wrong, because he's a very good coach. So I 100% agree with you, Paul. They're under wicked pressure now as well. Like, they have to perform, like. So, it's good. I think we've got to go up there and do early and quieten the crowd, though, Because when the when St James's Park get behind them, it's a big place to play like that.
I think we're going to be playing a very nice attacking style early on, and I think they'll be under pressure. If we score the first goal, I don't know if I'm going to be able to contain myself at 2:30 odd in the morning, mate.
Yeah, I 100%. I think you're going to see a lot of this slow, meticulous build up, though. A lot of the foot in the ball from Ings and slowing it down, because they're going to want to deflate the crowd nice and early. Yep. Which just makes sense, because you don't want to be getting, and hopefully then that'll draw them out a little bit, and we know how good we are when we get pressed. So yeah, it's very exciting. I'd love to see them attack the game like they did at Villa Park, where we just blew them away for the first 20-25 minutes. But I just think they'll approach it a little bit more cautious away from home.
I think they have to as well, mate. I think they have to. So let's look at our 11 for our starting 11 for the game, mate. I haven't put a lot of thought into this, so I'll be kind of winging it at the moment. But obviously, Martinez has got to be, I mean, Emmy's going to be the keeper. There's no doubt in the world about that.
Yeah, 100% Emmy. Emmy's definitely in goal. This is why I find it so exciting, though, because I've changed my mind and my thoughts on what's going to happen so much. Like, because usually by this stage of the season, pre-season, you think you'd have a fair idea what he's thinking, like, or any manager is thinking. But Emery's been hard to figure out this pre-season, man.
Well, good. I mean,
it's brilliant. It's great. It's exactly what you want from your manager, like.
We, mate, exactly. If we can't guess, then it's going to be hard for the opposition. Mate, what do you have? You have a back four?
Yes, back four. I think because we're away from home, back four.
And who have you got there?
I think that Emery wouldn't have shown all his cards last night. Just smart. The back four, I think, is going to play. It's going to be Kanza right back.
Yep.
Torres, Mings, and Dina.
I can't disagree with that. Yeah. And it's been funny because there was real questions on if Konsa could fill in at that right back spot. And that's been a really nicely answered, will it work long term in the Premier League? No, we know that, but we'll start off that way. So I agree with you there, mate.
I think if this game was at home, Matty Cash would be starting. But yes. I think it's the fact because Newcastle offer such a threat on the wings. And Matty Cash has been tucking in last season to be that back three anyway. I just think Kanza's going to sit out there and deal with the wingers a bit more.
But you wouldn't be shocked. You wouldn't be shocked or disappointed if Matty Cash wasn't.
Very well, maybe 100%. I mean, he still could be, like, but just in my opinion, this is how I think he's just going to approach the game. I think it's going to be Kanza right back, Torres, Mings and Dina.
Now, this is going to be the hard one, mate. The midfield. You know, I'm going with a five in the mid because I'm saying that some of them will play a bit further up, but yeah. I'm going the five there. Who have you got in the midfield to start, mate, the first game, or do you want me to go first?
I think it's going to be Kamara,
yep,
and Tillemans.
Yep.
Louise on the left.
Yep.
McGinn on the right.
Yep. And so that's four.
I think we're going to play with a four.
Okay. You think we're going to play two up front?
4-1-1, I think is what we're
going to do. Yeah, that's the way I'm going with it. And that's what I meant about that fifth midfielder is that they're between the midfielder and the kind of striking position.
Yeah, kind of number 10, I think, with a player dropping in, yeah.
So who's going to play that that role there?
Diaby.
Yeah, it has to be, man. So I think we're on the exact same. I think we've got the exact same 11 here because obviously we know who the striker's going to be.
Yeah, so it's going to be Watkins. So I think no, maybe there is a slight chance it is very possible that Buendia plays that left side role and it does become just Luis and Kamara in the middle. But I think because we're away from home, because we're playing Newcastle, Newcastle are very strong in the middle. I can see us putting the three lads in there and Luis will be the one to play a bit further forward on the left.
Yeah, and geez, we've got some options. If things aren't going the right way, or even if they are going the right way, the options on the bench are just superb. Guys, if you can hear a truck out the front of my house, we on Sundays, it's old school. We have an ice cream truck go past. It's amazing.
Yeah, we get that in our state here as well.
I'll let people listen for a moment. So ice cream and donuts, mate, they're always a good thing. So maybe that's a good sign of next week's game.
the only other thing that I will think, because I will think we will slightly play different because we are St James, but last season at Villa Park, The tactic was that they played Mourinho and Ramsey really high up, so Trippier couldn't get forward as much, and Jacob Murphy, and it really worked a treat. Obviously Mourinho and Ramsey are both out injured this week, so the only other thing is he may play Buendia out there, push Deeney up a little bit higher and let Buendia get a bit wide. But I just think it's going to be, he's going to approach it slightly different. So I do think Luiz is going to play on that left. So it's almost going to be a three in the middle at times. But when we're attacking, Luiz pushing up that bit further. John McGinn on the right, tucking in on the opposite side.
Absolutely. Now, look, if I could focus on Newcastle just for a moment. They've had a very similar pre-season to us. They beat Rangers, drew 3-3 with us, 1-1 with Chelsea, beat Brighton Hove 2-1. And then I think, Fiorentina they beat, and now they play tomorrow morning against Villarreal. So it's very similar kind of pre-seasons for both teams.
Yeah, 100%. And they're, who did I see? They're getting Livramento from Southampton for right back as well. Yeah. It looks done and dusted, but I don't expect him to play Saturday because Trippier will surely play right back, you know. But
their squad's good, you know. I mean, I look at their squad, it's starting to really come together. Yeah, they've got a lot of options there as well, haven't they? Hell of a lot.
They do, 100%. Yeah, I mean, their midfield will be good now with Bruno, Joe Linton and Tonelli. So that's why I think we're going to play with the three lads, Tillemans and Luiz and Kamara, with Luiz more on the left, because I think I don't think you can give up that much space in the middle to Newcastle at home at St. James's, because those three boys can, like Bruno's as good as Luiz is controlling the game. You know, I think Luiz is probably the better footballer overall, but Bruno can control games as much as Luiz can for Newcastle, as Luiz does for us. So that's why I expect Tillemans to play in with the two of them, just because you can't let Newcastle get a hold in the middle, especially at St. James's Park. Last year, they were so good at home. So,
I agree. Look, so me.
Yes. Did
you get
Anthony Gordon still? No. He's had a really good summer.
He's had a good summer, mate, but I reckon he's weak as piss. And if they play him, I'm really confident we'll get a result. He is their Bailey.
It's more likely Harvey Barnes starts on that left, I think.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And that's another reason I think that Konsa goes out there instead of Cash, because but Barnes is so direct all the time. I think you're going to need someone sitting back who's a better one-on-one defender.
Mate, it's good for football, isn't it? To see a team like Newcastle, a team like Villa, they're going to really hurt some very good teams this year. And I think that's great for football, to be honest.
It's fantastic, yeah, and they're both building nice, good teams for us. Like they're two really good squads now, so it's a really interesting battle, though. So I think that's going to be my team. I think we agreed on pretty much most players there, I'd say, do we?
Oh, I think we agreed on the whole
team. Yeah. As I said, there is a part of me that thinks Buendia could start, but I just think
I kind of do like him for the gritty battle. You know, I really weighed that up. I like him for the gritty battle that we're going to have away. So it wouldn't shock me if we saw, you know, a couple of different changes to what we've said. And that just goes to show the depth in our squad.
Well, like if this was last year, we were nearly able to name the starting team every week, you know, and I just can't do that now. I mean, I even looked last night when he made a couple of changes at halftime when Bailey and Torres went off. And I was looking at that and I was thinking, oh, that could be the starting team for next week. The team that started the second half last night, I was thinking, because that had, you had Diaby and Watkins up top, you had McGinn on the right, Buendia on the left, Kamara and Luiz in midfield. And then you had Dina, Cash, Konsa and Mings. And that was the team that started the second half. And I thought, right, if he plays this for the rest of this half, this is the team I think could start next week. But then 10 minutes later, he made a lot of changes. So I was like, right, it's probably not the team he's going to play next week. So it's really good. But I do believe that he definitely didn't show Newcastle's hand last night. That's why I think Torres starting the left. I can't see Dina not starting this game, because Mourinho got so much joy against Newcastle last year at Villa Park, where he played high up. And I'd expect Dina to play a similar role this time to try and stop Trippier getting forward so much, because Trippier offers so much in the other half of the pitch as well, you know.
No, he really does, mate. So let's do what we always do. Give us your score and I'll give you my score and how we actually get our score as well.
I think it's going to be 1-1, and I think it's Watkins.
Damn, I'm 1-1 with Watkins scoring as well. And normally I'll make a joke about it, but it's going to be four or five little interplays, and he is actually just going to tap it in at the back post. And we'll actually be in the lead at halftime. They'll score early, and then the formations will change, and it'll be a one-all game.
Yeah, and Watkins will score, but it won't be a penalty.
Hey, you know what? That's a really good point. He cannot take penalties now. I mean, that penalty was, you can say it was unlucky because the keeper saved it with his feet. But you got to drill that home. That's got to be drilled home.
Look, I've no problem the strikers taking the penalties in pre-season. Like, that's fine by me. But he's 50-50 record. He can't be taking them in the competitive games. I mean, he doesn't look confident taking them at all. Like, no. You know, and then you can't have it. And that's no knocking him. Some strikers don't take penalties, and that's fine. Like people are saying, oh, but would knock his confidence. I think it'd knock your confidence a lot more if he misses a big the last minute of a big game and the fans are getting on his back. I don't see any problem with Emery turning around and saying to him, look, mate, I'm gonna take that burden away from you. You do what you're good at. And if we're 2-0 up in a game and you're on a hat trick and the game's done, penalty's all yours. But I'm going to designate someone else the penalty. You know, it has to. You do.
I totally agree. His ability to run and take the ball on and score is not going to be affected by him not being given penalties, but it could affect him if he's given penalties and doesn't score. And the other thing is, it's so deflating whether you're a supporter or on the field. A missed penalty is so deflating, isn't it? It's like this big build up, and you miss the penalty, and your shoulders just drop.
Yeah, and that's it. And like he is our ultimate goal threat. Like you can't have him missing a penalty after half an hour in a big game, and then like I'm not saying he'll go missing, but it's definitely dent his confidence a bit. And I just don't see why they need to put that burden on him. He's clearly not a clinical penalty taker, and that's fine. Do you know,
yep.
there's enough in the team that can take them. You know, so I would take him away from him, and I think Emery will have to do something about that. I can understand why Emery would want him taking him in pre-season, because what does it matter? You want to get your striker fit and firing, but yeah, I think he needs to take that burden away from him. Agree, mate.
Anything more you've got for the pod? I think it's been a good one. We've looked at the pre-season, we've looked at our lineups, looked at the Newcastle game. Have you got anything further you wanted to add to the pod?
Yeah, I just want to touch off John McGinn again.
Yep.
John McGinn, the football that man is playing is just absolutely unbelievable. Like, just I can't get over how good he's become. I remember, like, it was probably the worst call I've made on this podcast is when because ages ago when I said like that, I think he's gone. I think he's one of the most overrated players in the team now. You know, the performances weren't there. I still stand by that he was just he wasn't performing anywhere near a level. But now, and I know now. If I know then what I know now about how bad things were in the system and probably behind the scenes in the club, things were just so bad under Gerrard. I'm so glad because McGinn is one of those players that you want to do well, you know, because he's just a normal guy, isn't he? You know, there's no airs of grace about him. But his performance levels, I just wanted to touch off him. And since Emery came in, he's gone to the 50 million footballer that I thought that he was overrated when we were saying he was, you know. He's just brilliant, man, and I just can't see any starting lineup that he doesn't play this season. In meaningful games, obviously, there's going to be games where he's rested, but I think after Martinez, now McGinn is probably the first name of the team sheet now. You know,
well, I think where it also comes into play is, and it's the same as any team sport, when you have better players around you and you're not the player that everyone's looking for, or you don't have that burden on your shoulders to be the one carrying the team. It frees him up just to be the John McGinn that he is for Scotland.
Yeah, and like I would never have picked him as captain material. Like, and he looks like it's made from now, you know. So,
Bringing humour, and people should never underestimate humour and hard work and what that does for the rest of the team. And the way he handled himself when you know you can either drop your load. And it's the same, you would have worked with people like this. Someone has a little bit of a setback at work and doesn't get the promotion. They either work harder, put their head down, work harder, or they drop their load. And he had that choice. And I'm sure in his mind at one stage, he was like, I don't want to be here. And it's his hard work and the belief now that Emery's given him, mate. So
Like, we should really treasure the fact that we have Mings and McGinn still in the squad, like having two players that came up the promotion with us and know their starters going into the European games with us, you know. That's rare in football these days, and I think it's like, especially the two characters that they are. I just love it that the two of them are still regulars in this team, you know, from a team that got promoted a few years ago. And they've been through a lot of highs and lows, and I'm just so glad that they're getting to experience the highs now, you know.
If we win a cup final, or we win a Europe final, you know, any level of Europe or anything like that, I think there is a place, forget stats and everything, there is a place for Mings to be considered a club legend, because the way he's handled himself, the way he's continued to improve, how he embraces supporters, that to me is legendary. So I've kind of revised my thoughts on, he could certainly become a club legend in that regard.
Well, they're like McGinn and Mings, like they're just a credit to the club, like the way they carry themselves. They're like, I mean, the two of them have been through the mire at Villa. Like, they've had real extreme highs, but they've had extreme lows too. I mean, the two of them have taken serious batterings from the fans at different times, you know. They've been through a lot, the two of them. So I'd love to see them win a trophy. I'd love to see them all win a trophy. But what I'm saying is, it would just be special to see the two of them standing up, lifting a trophy, considering that they were there in the playoffs and stuff, you know. And as you said, then you'd be looking at club status, like, as legendary, because any club that can come from I think we were 13th in the championship when Smith took over.
Yep.
So to come from there in that January, begin that 10-game run, and go all the way up to European champions or FA Cup winners or get to the Champions League, whatever it might be. It's incredible, and it's something that doesn't really happen at football anymore, you know?
Well, look, I hope people have enjoyed the pod. We're missing a couple of our veterans in Rhino and Tess, and they'll hopefully be back next week. I just can't wait for the game, mate. And how can we get you on Twitter?
Yeah, it's at Spud Talks Ball.
Absolutely. And I'm at Paul_football. You can also get us at Aussie Villains and also join our Facebook groups as well. Spud's been a pleasure, mate. I hope you have a lovely working week, and we look forward to the start of the Premier League.
Yeah, I can't wait, mate. And up the Villa.
As always, up the Villa. Mate, there will be hardly any editing. I've already... Thanks for joining us for another Aussie Villains podcast. You can get us on Twitter at Aussie Villains. Get us on Facebook at Australian Fans of Villa. You can also find all our podcasts and other podcasts from other sports through the Love Sport Podcast Network on Apple, Anchor, Google, Spotify, wherever you want. This is, was, and always will be the Aussie Villains podcast. Let's go, Villa!